Cole of Bananas slash the Survivor Girls. I'm so excited! Especially for this edition of the Creepin' It Real Horrorcast. I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm that good buddy Lunchbox.
And I am pumped! So excited! Much excited.
I figured after all of the Halloweens and the of the deads, it's like, you know what, I'm gonna give this one to you, Meg, and I let you, this is all you. Like, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm excited. But before we get into it, thank you so much again for joining us. Hit that subscribe button, and we're going to drop your favorite podcatcher every Tuesday. Like, share, comment. 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated, obviously. You can join us on social media, Facebook and Instagram, at Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. You can also email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com if you have movie ideas or if you just want to chat with Lunchbox, because he's the one who moderates that. Also, we do have merch, and it is getting dangerously close to Christmas time, so get it in quick, creepinitreal.redbubble.com for all the merchy goodness.
And any support really helps, because I just literally look down at my pants. I have holes all in my pants. Literally, my pants are full of holes. I'm splitting.
Lunchbox is a charity case.
Help what has happened? Please, help me buy pants.
Help a brother out.
Jesus Christ. Like, I look down and I'm like, what the hell? These things are literally falling apart in my hands.
They're Walmart shorts.
Jesus Christ.
I'm surprised they lived this long.
So sorry, my poor pants.
Your poor pants. You're fresh out of pants. So why is Mistress Meg so excited, you may ask?
Yeah.
Well, anyone who knows me knows I don't get excited about much.
Is it my pants?
It's never your pants.
Damn it.
It's never going to be your pants.
Buy some merch.
We need to start a new pants.
Buy some merch. I need pants.
We need a new pants fund. Anyway, so I'm excited because this is one of my favorite movies, just full stop. We're doing The Lost Boys today, and it's my one of my favorite vampire movies, it's one of my favorite horror movies, it's one of my favorite movies, probably at least top 10, if not top 5, of all time.
And you know what's interesting?
Mm-hmm.
You have never actually stated what a top level movie for you is. We all know what mine is, if you're a...
If you've paid attention for a minute. Just...
It's Jaws. This is one movie where if I have to ask you, like, what is your favorite, most of the time, like, you kind of no-sell it and you just go, I don't really have one. I've never really been that way. This is it. Mm-hmm. This is the one.
Mm-hmm. It is. So before we get into the details of the film, I didn't see this movie until... I was 18 or 19.
Really?
Yeah, I was older. My boyfriend at the time was a huge fan of the film. And he's like, and he mentioned that it was one of his favorite movies. And I was like, I mean, cool. That's great. What is it? And he was shocked. Shocked, I tell you, that I had not seen this film. And then I saw the box cover. And I was like, oh, I've seen the poster art and stuff like that before. So that was, I was aware of its existence. Because you hear The Lost Boys, you think Peter Pan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a no-brainer thing, connection.
I'm actually kind of surprised that there hasn't been some type of Lost Boys, like, Peter Pan movie. Like, something that's around, like, a story of the Lost Boys.
I'm sure there are kicking around as, like, low-budget things, but not a major mainstream release.
I have a really cool, like, horror movie, like, idea. I kind of wanted to get into it, but it's like with the Lost Boys thing, but yeah, it's a cool twisted Peter Pan story. So,
but anyway, so
making money.
But anyway, so that was my initial reaction was, is this Peter Pan movie? And he's like, no, wait, what? No, it's vampires. And I was like, what?
Boy, do I feel stupid.
Well, I didn't feel stupid because it was a natural leap in logic. But the whole thing about, it's a vampire movie, and I'm like, all right. And he said that Kiefer Sutherland was in it. And I'm like, okay. So, all right, so we sat down and we watched it, and I was instantly in love with this stupid fucking movie. and I've been literally half of my life with this stupid movie. I watch it at least once a year, usually at least twice. Prior to, I watched it for the to do the episode last night. We're recording on a Saturday, so I watched it Friday night, and I think I watched it probably 4 or 5 months ago. So it really wasn't even all that long ago that I even watched it last. So, like I said, at least once a year, usually at least twice. This one goes into rotation. It's kind of my, like, we all have our comfort CD or our comfort album, our comfort movie, our comfort thing, and this is one of them. This is one of my go-tos for just, I want to put something on, and it's something familiar, and it gives me a giggle, and I know I can almost quote this movie pretty much front to back. But yeah, I absolutely adore this thing. And so The Lost Boys came out on July 31st, 1987. It was made for a budget of about $8.5 million. It ended up grossing about $32.5 million worldwide. But in the last 35 years, has picked up a massive cult following. It's a huge, huge cult following. It was written by Jan Fisher, James Jeremias, Jeffrey Boehm, directed by Joel Schumacher. The
That's right, everyone. Bat nipples.
This is pre-bat nipples. It stars Jason Patrick as Michael, Corey Haim as Sam, Diane Wiest as Lucy, Bernard Hughes as Grandpa, Edward Herman as Max, Kiefer Sutherland as David. This was only his second movie he'd ever done. And well done. The first one was The Goonies. No, that was this one.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Jamie Gertz as Star, Corey Feldman as Edgar Frog, Jameson Newlander as Alan Frog, Brooke McCarter as Paul, Billy Worth as Dwayne, Alex Winter as Marco, Chance Michael Corbett as Laddie.
What a good name.
Laddie?
Yeah, I love that. That's a...
I mean, his real... The actor's name is a good one, too. Chance yeah. Michael Corbett.
It's cool. Laddie.
And then we have a bunch of bit players after that. There's a small cameo sort of thing by Kelly Jo Minter as Maria. In you might remember her from... I think she ended up the following year doing Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Warrior. Mm. She was Alice's friend. And her name is Escape.
Yeah. And
and Timmy Capello as the oiled up saxophone
player. That's what I was about to get into. I was like, the fact that he is credited and also goes to conventions and people are like, he's kind of like an iconic thing. Blows my mind.
He's Tina Turner's saxophone player.
Yeah.
That's how he got this gig, is because he was a band member of Tina Turner's band. And I think Joel Schumacher is gay. I think he's gay. He was, because he passed a few years ago.
He ain't anymore.
I think Joel Schumacher was gay. And this movie, if there was any questions about that, might have confirmed that idea, because somebody said, we're going to make a vampire movie, and you know what we need? A muscly, oiled-up saxophone player.
We need flames, we need nipples, we need thrusting.
And spandex, and baby oil. It was a whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, you know, bat butt, bat nipples, saxophone nipples, it kind of plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's questions to be had.
Yeah, right? and I think it doesn't take much to actually answer all of them.
Nipples.
Nipples.
See, now...
It started so early.
Now, see, I'm a huge, absolute huge Huey Lewis in the News fan.
Right, so the saxophone is like your jam.
They should have hired this guy for their saxophone player, and they would have gotten so many more chicks, not just dad rock. Like, it's just, come on.
But
it's
this
big square.
What? This is the original teen vampire movie. This is before Twilight. This is before any Glitter. Of that stuff. We'll get to that. So
we're actually going to talk about Glitter? Awesome.
Yeah.
Like Mariah Carey's Glitter?
No.
Damn,
we're
going to
talk about actual, like, the herpes of the craft world glitter powder.
Oh.
Glitter powder, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was like, I mean, they kind of go hand in hand. It's,
I mean, it's pretty Mariah similar. Carey's movie is horrifying. That's a horror movie for a whole other reason. Yeah. But, yeah, so this movie's got everything. It's got vampires. It's got Chinese food. It's got handsome boys in it. It's got a very immature Corey Haim. It's got a beautiful Alaskan Malamute in it.
That is a very beautiful Alaskan
Malamute. A handsome shepherd mix named Thorn.
Batman number 14. It's a pretty serious book. Yeah.
It has Jameson Newlander and Corey Feldman pretending to be Rambo.
Oh, God.
That was, if you've seen any of the behind-the-scenes stuff and interviews and docs on this movie, Joel Schumacher very specifically told both of those boys, pretend you're Marines and go watch Rambo movies.
Yeah, sure. God, like, I can't, like, the cringe. Yeah. So,
what was that?
It flows out of me every, like, as I'm watching the Frog Brothers, and even, like, Corey Haim's characters, like, it's just, like, just them interacting, I'm like, children don't do this.
Okay, so herein lies the problem. Herein lies the problem.
It's like, Joel, come on.
The thing is that the original script was meant to go to Richard Donner, who ended up having to back out of directing the movie because of the scheduling conflicts. Like, it just took too long in pre-production to actually get going, so he had to back down to just a producer credit. Okay, fine. So that's when he recommended, I'm pretty sure I have this right, he recommended Schumacher for the director job. He ended up getting the job. But the original script was meant for these kids. Like, it was supposed to be like the Goonies. These kids were supposed to be 10 or 11 years old. Which is why you have that scene with Corey Haim in the bathtub. And it's like, 15-year-old boys don't do that shit.
No.
An 8 or 9-year-old boy might. But not a 15-year-old boy. And I think Corey Haim was, like, 16 at the time he was filming this movie, so...
Unless you're, watching Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
He was 15. He was 15 when he was filming this.
A little booty bump.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, so... Both, I think... Corey Haim was 15. Corey Feldman, I think, was slightly older.
I mean, they were right neck and neck, so...
Yeah, they were very close. They're very close in age. Yeah, they're only within a couple months of each other. This was the first film with the Coreys together. This is the one that kicked off, like, I think, like, a half
the
dozen.
The whole, yeah.
The Corey craze of the late 80s.
Because, like, they were in their own little, just movies, like, by themselves.
They were like Mary-Kate and Ashley before Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah.
So they did their... If you're not a millennial, you're probably going to miss that one.
Who?
Does anyone remember the... Anyone who was a kid in the early 90s remembers the Mary-Kate and Ashley videos?
Oh, my family owned almost all of those videos, and, like, we burned the shit out of those. Like, not literally, like, we just, like, watched them so many times that it was just wore the shit out of them.
Yep.
But yeah.
Brother for sale.
Yeah, brother for sale. 25
cents.
God.
So, but they were, like, the big 80s craze. It was, let's see, this was 87, so you had New Kids on the Block, New Edition, and the Coreys.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, the thing.
That was, yeah.
On every teen girl's wall.
The teen pop, like, teen idol magazine.
Oh, for sure.
Boom, Corey.
Especially Corey Haim, because he was the cute... I thought he was the cuter of the two. But anyway. So, Jason Patrick, though.
Hey,
he's literally old enough to be my dad.
Yeah.
I don't care.
So, speaking of the Coreys... I kind of wanted you to just give, you know, I wanted to remember back when you and me went to Spooky Empire.
Oh.
And I want you to...
You sure you don't want me to save this for next year?
No.
I mean, next week when we do the tribe?
No. Because we went to the Lost Boys Q&A. And we sat down.
It was Corey Haim.
It was awesome. It was a great Q&A.
Well, it was super fun. And my friend Kat was there with us. And we had a really, really good time wandering around. It was Corey Haim and Brooke McCarter doing a Q&A sit down. And I was one of the first ones to get up to ask a question. And this was probably, like, a month after The Tribe came out.
Yeah.
And this was 2010? 11, maybe? Somewhere in there? And it was over 20 years between the two movies. So I hadn't watched the film yet, but I saw the box art, the movie poster, and I saw Corey Feldman on it, but I didn't see Corey Haim. And I guess at the time there was an A&E series they were doing, the two of them, about their dysfunctional relationships, growing up as child stars in Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. And so but I wasn't aware of the show. I hadn't seen it. So I get up, I go to ask my question, and I ask about why he wasn't featured in the sequel. Well, I saw the Tribe a while after that, and he was in a post, like a mid-credit or post-credit scene. So, but he wasn't a part of the main film. So I was like, hey, how come you weren't a part of this? And he kind of got a bit ranty about it.
You I think a little salty.
I was a little, I might have pissed him off a little. Because then he started ranting about Corey Feldman and how he was a vegan that wore leather pants.
Yeah, like,
and it went that from, part, that line very much sticks out in my brain because it was just so out of nowhere.
Well, because I remember, like, there was, like, a whole bunch of seats that were over on the right side of us, and in this little room, like, I thought it was weird because it was kind of like it was standing room only. However,
sitting on the floor.
Yeah, they didn't, but they didn't want anybody up, like, in that closer to the stage to stand, so they made everyone sit on the floor, mm-hmm. which I've never been to a Q&A where they make people sit on the floor like that.
The hotel was a weird one. That was just an odd.
So, I mean, I was fine with it, but it was just like, I mean, we're sitting there.
Sitting on the floor wasn't the problem. It was the Megan opened her mouth and pissed off the star problem.
First question, too. Like, and then, like, after every question after that, you could just, like, hear the salt in his voice. Like, it just set him on this path of just this darkness and just like.
He was grouchy.
So grumpy.
I guess.
And earlier in the rest of the whole thing, he was great. Like, they were, like, happy-go-lucky and, like, having a good time.
Yeah, and then I asked him about the Lost Boys sequel, and apparently that was the wrong question.
Like, jeez, I turned to you and was like, good job, Meg.
I should have asked him about License to Drive. I don't know.
Or Silver Bullet. Something.
Or like, something. Good God. My mistake.
I was like, oh, my God.
So, yeah. My bad. He's no longer with us, but I will hold that memory near and dear forever.
We need to tell one night my Gary Busey story.
I think you told that one during our Silver Bullet episode.
Oh, I think I might have. Yeah, go back and listen to that.
If you haven't, check it out. You'll get the full Gary Busey.
Go team!
Story. God, so much teeth.
God, Gary, that was so much fun.
So, the Lost Boys, I guess I might as well just talk about the glitter thing.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, I have a Blu-ray copy of the movie. I've had it probably for, like, 7 or 8 years now. I've had it for a
you
long time.
You bedazzled it. I know you did.
No. No. But I have a 4K TV now, so I have a super high-def TV, and I'd never noticed this before. In the 100 different times, probably, I've seen this movie since the first time, I never noticed that when the boys went down into the cave where David and his crew were sleeping for the day, and they staked Marco. Marco started spewing that brown liquid and stuff, freaking out, stuff like that. When they go running out into the sunlight, that brown liquid had glitter in it.
Mm.
And I had never noticed it before. I just thought they were covered in, like, blood and bile and whatever else.
That's gross.
But for the first time ever, I was watching this, and I was like, are they sparkling? Y'all, Joel Schumacher did Twilight before Twilight. The vampires themselves don't sparkle in the daylight. Jason Patrick was never glimmering, shimmering, nothing. But apparently, when you kill a vampire and they bleed all over you, they bleed blood, guts, and glitter.
Now, was it a like a straight up glitter, or was it just a glisten?
No. It looked like it's stripper dust. That's full on. Like, those boys went to the club, glitter.
Hey, we got the D squad. Glitter.
like fart.
Pretty much that's where I was like. Oh, thanks, Candace.
And that was kind of thanks, Van Wilder. That one. But yeah, I'd never noticed it before. Thanks, High Def, for... I mean, maybe other people have noticed and I haven't. But yeah, I'd never noticed it.
See, that's why I almost feel like all these movies that are coming out in 4K, I mean, it's awesome just because, like, you're getting, like, this high quality. But then it's like, when you really think about it, it's like, is it, though? Because you're seeing... I mean, yeah, you're seeing a lot of stuff that you weren't... that you never noticed before.
But some of them are flaws.
Yeah. I mean, like, the one thing that I have always vowed after watching one Blu-ray of it that I would never watch any other ones, like, you know, going forward, is all, like, the Universal and classic horror movie monsters.
Those are hard to clean up.
You cannot do Blu-ray. Like, it's better as a VHS or, like, just a standard DVD. Like, you need that graininess. You need that because when it was first released, that's what it was. I mean, I think one that I tried to watch, I think someone tried to, or they redid Nosferatu on Blu-ray, and I'm like, no, like, you can't.
The
like,
thing with a lot of those old black and white movies, and it's not... The 80s horror films have a different set of problems in high def. But the fuzziness of those old 30s and before black and white movies, the fuzziness adds a layer of atmosphere to it because it's not quite clear.
Yeah.
It adds that kind of just a little element of the spooky on top of it. The problem with some of the 80s films in high def is you can really see the seams.
Yeah. Especially since... All like, I mean, a lot of those movies that are done with like for horror at least, when they're done with the practical effects, there's a lot of them you're like, oh, that's pretty rough.
In
like,
that same scene when Corey Feldman, he's holding the stake in his hand, he's about to stake Marco. You can see the block. Because the stake is split, it's the stunt stake.
Yeah.
It's split into three pieces, and you can see the block where it's meant retracts, to retract. Yeah. And this is probably a couple of seconds, because the very next cut, he's got the hero stake, where you don't see anything. But yeah, you see where it's going to retract. It's very similar to the empty gun in Day of the Dead moment, where you're just like, how did you miss that?
But even then, it's like, when it's because it's that high def, you're just, it's clear. Like, it's not...
Mm-hmm.
So if you went back and watched something like, watched that same scene just on DVD, it's like, are you going to have a whole different kind of feel to it? Or,
well, even 35 years ago, watching it in movie theaters, because it was on film... You might have... It was probably just fuzzy enough to miss it.
Yeah.
But also this... I think this one might have been one of those under the gun, we have a deadline, let's get the shit over with kind of deals. And they just put the wrong cut in that. It's a shit happens thing. It happens in a lot of movies with those... They just have those errors. But yeah, it's like extra clear when you watch it in high def. It's like, whoa, that was clearly a fuck up.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's like...
So are those extensions. Woof. Brooke McCarter and Alex Winter had to wear these extension like hair pieces, and they've always looked goofy to me.
Yeah.
But in like extra high def, they're really good. Like even Blu-ray on a 4K TV, like you're not going to get exactly the same quality as if you had a 4K disc. But it still cleans up the image, like what Blu-ray did to DVD. It kind of cleans up the image just a little. It's a little bit more clear, even though it's not as good as it could be if you use the correct media. But their weaves, especially when they were hanging upside down, and it's just, ooh. Ooh, yeah, it hurt.
Little parts of me is like, I know that they're trying to do this biker gang, and it's the 80s, and but I was like...
Schumacher was trying to make it sec, because he wanted to grow them up a little bit so he could do a lot more. So he made them older teenagers. All of the actors, I think, except for Kiefer Sutherland... Nope. He's my mom's age. So yeah, they were all in their early 20s. I think Alex Winter might have been the youngest one at, like, 19.
I think, yeah, he must have been around...
But the other ones 19, were, like, Jason Patrick, I think, was 21. I think Kiefer Sutherland was 21 or 22. Like, they were all college age.
And they actually fit perfectly for that, because, you know, most of the time when they get...
Even though Michael was still supposed to be in high school, I'm like, with that jawline, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, God, yeah, no. But, like, that was the thing, was, like, like, some of my favorites is, when they put these actors in for these, like, high school roles, and it's, like, they're clearly not. Like, the dude that plays Fridge in the new Jumanji movie.
Or Rizzo.
Rizzo.
Yeah. Stockard Channing was 34 when she did Grease.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The woman had crow's feet, and she was supposed to be playing 18?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Well, it's like, or, like, Fridge, I think he was, like, 20. Or
no, he was 35.
He's 35, yeah. And it was just, like...
And, I mean, I can see why...
I mean, he's a good-looking high schooler, but, you know...
But he was not in high school. He could have passed for college, not high school.
Yeah.
Like, the tail end of college, maybe he got held back a year, was taking his degree slow or something. But the Jason Patrick, because there was at one point where he was getting sort of deep into his transformation when... his mom, Diane Weiss' character, looked at him and said, things are going to change around here when you go back to school. I'm like, high school?
Yeah, college? Huh.
What school are we talking about? Because, like, I mean, I don't remember high school very clearly because I've been out now for almost 20 years.
That was hard to say.
But, my 20th, my 20th, yeah, 20 years next year.
I just don't care anymore.
Woof. So many gray hairs. But like, I don't remember any boy. Well, there might have, no, there was one. We had one. Because he looked like a Backstreet Boy. It was really funny. But I don't really remember boys having those jawlines or being with those shoulders and all that stuff. Like, that's very clearly a physique and a look you get in your 20s. So it was hard to believe, because Corey Haim was 16 or 15. 15. So he was a high school kid. He could have been a freshman or a sophomore. And that's what you're supposed to look like. He was still baby-faced. He played a fashion victim. Like, he was clearly a mall kid.
Yeah. A lot of hand-me-downs.
No, he was...
That seemed like a hand-me-down kid.
No, he was not a hand-me-down kid. He was a fashion victim. He was a full-blown 80s fashion. It was bonkers. So to think that... Michael was maybe, like, 2 years older than he was. It's kind of like, no. I don't buy that for a second. But, yeah, Jason Patrick was a dreamboat. Swoon.
Chowing.
Oh, come on. Like, you didn't see Star and go,
come on. Yeah, of course.
She was the lone girl in that sausage party.
Yeah, and she was great.
She was beautiful. I love the Star character. She was written to be this, like, little blonde pixie girl. And I guess the story goes that Jason Patrick is the one that brought Jamie Gertz in to audition for that part, because they'd worked together prior on a different project. And Schumacher was looking for the little pixie girl. And then he met Jamie Gertz, and he was like, oh, maybe we can take this in a different direction. Because she's so pretty, and she draws your attention. But what I love is that she's got that wild curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one character that I see on screen that I can identify with, because my hair does the exact same thing. And it's little and it's minor, but when I was in my teens, I was like, oh my God! It looks like me, just with the stupid curly hair. For once, it's not this perfectly coiffed blonde.
Yeah.
She was wild, and she was a bit of, like, a free spirit hippie type, and she had that crazy curly hair, and she was wearing the beaded, like, hippie skirts and stuff, and...
Yeah, because Star wasn't, like, she was in the process of being transitioned.
She was, she was partway into her transformation. She drunk the blood, but and Michael was supposed to be her first victim.
Yeah.
Because the transformation is not complete until you actually draw blood.
That's right, yes.
Yourself. So the vampire lore here, some of it plays with the traditional vampire lore, some of it does not. So sunlight, holy water are still a thing. They still have to be invited in to the house. However, like, garlic doesn't work.
Well, no. That's the thing, is it does.
No, it doesn't. That was holy water.
Well, no. But it was when you invite the vampire in, when you give them permission, it's kind of like null and void on all of that. So it's like, doesn't matter what you do to them.
Oh, that's right, because Max said that before
he's like, what did you do that for? Like, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Don't I look stupid?
But they do play around with the traditional vampire lore a little bit, but you don't have to get bitten to turn, is I think the big deviation from that. Because Michael just drank the blood from the wine bottle, but you don't finish your transformation until you actually bite somebody yourself. You have to draw blood, I think, is how that goes.
Yeah, it's they never really specify it, because, and that's why I was kind of confused with Star, because she never did the whole crazy vampire face like the boys did.
I think that was just because Schumacher wanted to keep her pretty.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking that maybe it would have been too on the nose for Fright Night, because Fright Night was in and around that same...
That was 2 years before.
2 years. So if they had a crazy vampire chick face, I think it would have been too close, you know, in that realm. But that's where it's like, okay, well, if she was waiting, or if they were trying to get her to bite Michael in order to turn fully, it was weird, because Michael turned. Like, he just, like, it was like over time,
he drank the blood and he could vamp out, but it still wasn't going to,
like, stick?
Or... he wasn't full, because he was still a daywalker. He could still go out in the sunlight. Oh. It hurt his eyes.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was just displaced sunglasses, so that's when Corey Haim was like, you've been freebasing? I'm like, you asked that question?
Oh, zing.
I'm like, what? You asked that question? I think this is before he got into drugs.
Yeah.
But he was still a cute little innocent kid. But, he had to wear the sunglasses, and they still slept during the day, but they could go out in the sunlight. They just got really, they didn't have any energy.
Yeah, well, that's why I was like, it was confusing, because she didn't have those same tendencies, and she was still very on the level. Like, it felt very human, and that's where it was, but I loved that they did that, because it gave a good contrast to the crazy biker boys and a very sweet, innocent.
Like, I think it showed the Star innocent. Was more in control than the boys were, and she proved that a lot. Like, she developed a crush on Michael very quickly. Like, she saw him at that concert. They locked eyes, very attracted to each other. Okay, fine. Even it's though,
like, you hear Michael Bolton's song in the background.
Even though, no, it was a saxophone player. even though. You could have gotten the idea that she was with David.
That's what I thought.
Because he was very much in control, like, controlling her. She would ride on his motorcycle. She never got on the back. She never rode bitch with anybody else.
Yeah.
Just David.
So it's like, maybe David turned her, and it was like, that's your mind because I turned you, like, it's...
He was trying to coach her to go ahead and become a killer, but the boys were wild. All of them were. Not so much Laddie, because Laddie was just, he was very little, but all the older boys were, they just tore it up. And Star was always very much in control of her own behavior. She was maternal to a point. But I think the reason I can gather why she didn't vamp out like any of the boys did, including Laddie, was because she was more in control of herself, which is why she wasn't able to bite Michael. When she decided she kind of liked him, was her just going, you know what, nope, I'm not doing this.
I was, like, the whole movie, when they were starting to do this whole thing of who's the lead vamp and all this other stuff, I was like, it's gonna be her. It's like, you always get those weird little twists where it's like, oh shit, didn't expect that. But I was like, it's like...
Wouldn't it be funny if she was?
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, who's the lead vamp? And it's like, hey, what's up? Like, and then...
I think if you've never seen the film before and it was the first time watching the movie, I think it did a pretty decent job of setting up a few different possibilities as to who the head vampire was. Because the frogs and Sam suspected Max initially.
Yeah.
And... yeah, that was the correct one. The suspicions were right.
A+ all around, guys. But, gold stars.
But because of the little hiccup where if you invite the vampire in, they, you know, you basically give up all your power. So the garlic didn't work and all the other stuff they tried to pull didn't work. And because Max was tricksy, and I really appreciated this when he was standing there coming to dinner and he had the flowers for Lucy, and he goes, oh, you must be Michael. Well, you're the man of the house. I can't come in unless the man of the house invites me in. And so Michael, naturally, who's not in the mood, was just like,
cringe, you old fuck, get in here.
Was like, yeah, sure, fine, come on in.
Fuck off.
He didn't want to be there. And so,
date my mom, it gross.
And that was a little twisty. That was like, well, maybe it wasn't Max. And then they, because David was the leader of the Lost Boys group. Okay, maybe it is David. Right? Like, because we spend a lot of time with David. We don't spend a lot of time with Max. So it's, the obvious choice would have been David. Well, it wasn't David.
All right. So, I'm going to give you what I thought should have happened in The Lost Boys.
Uh-oh.
This film with vampires that seem to have glitter doo-doo blood. So
doo-doo?
So sorry.
Okay, doo-doo blood.
Doo-doo blood. So I liked that they did the whole thing with Max, and I loved just when they did do the turn. I thought that was super cool, because I love when they give you those vampires that you don't expect. And I like where he's just kind of like, white picket fence, and I have an everyday job. I work at an electronics store, and it's just...
video store.
Or video, same thing. I mean, it's just like, he works at a video store, but it's just the whole, like, I have an everyday job. Instead of it being like, I live in a very expensive and fancy house, I drink wine all day. Like, I sit in a dark... and like,
no, he's a normal dude with a job.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's probably one of my favorite things. That's probably one of my favorite vampires.
Because he was normal?
Yeah, 100%. Like, if I was a vampire, I would literally be in my holy shorts right now. And
you couldn't wear your holy shorts. They'd burn you.
Oh, I see what you did there. Oh, clever.
No, it really wasn't, though. Thank you.
Dad jokes galore. But no, so I love that they did the twist with Max, and I love that they were trying to do the whole buildup of, like, the boys knew, and then they gave you this whole thing of, like, maybe you didn't know.
Because he seemed too normal.
Too normal.
Yeah, he was too normal.
My 100% feeling that they should have gone with is the saxophone player should have been the head vampire.
Wow! That would have been right. What a hell of a curve.
Like, when they were just like, who is it? And he just, boom, bust down the door. like, you're like, oh shit, like in the vampire like makeup and just oiled dish, just all, just it's dripping all over the oily floor.
Fried chicken.
And like the mom is going, oh my god, my rug. Like that, like he should have been like, it was me the whole time, and just thrust in, and the boy's going, well, we're fucked.
Well, fuck me, like, I didn't see that coming.
Like,
that,
we ain't got nothing. And Max is like, I told you. Like, because the saxophone player was so seductive. And
is that the word you want to use?
So seductive. I'm going to say it like a please fucking don't. Wrestler.
Please don't. It's bad.
What wrestler did that a lot? Just the...
Oh, God. The Rick Rude thing? Oh, let me show you what a real man looks like.
So, but that was the thing. Is like, okay, that opening scene where they're all the boys are at this carnival, and this concert is just...
It's bumping.
Whoo! Like, are you kidding me? Like, you gotta... Like, that is like a... Like a carnival, like a strawberry festival, you know, show. And this dude, he's got flames and just, he is just getting it. Like, it's just, there's no way that that is just a everyday, like, oh yeah, we're going to go ride the shitty roller coaster after watching Saxy
tight pants.
Yeah, like, we're not going to be able to do anything like that. Like, so it's like... To have that man sit there and, like, just, you know, seduce everybody. It's like, just get everyone in and just hypnotize them with his
crotch
saxophone.
And his hip gyrations.
Like, that would be the perfect vampire. Like, he could... I mean, I think back to, you know, Queen of the Damned, right?
With Stuart Townsend?
Yeah. Like,
Lestat?
Well, yeah, with Lestat. And it's like... You know, that was a really good thing where it's like he could, you know, just hypnotize people with his voice and his music. This guy could do it with a saxophone and hip thrusting because he did it to me. And I can't stop looking away. It's like I just can't stop looking. He just keeps going. You know what it is? It's the fire. The flames on the stage do it for me.
Trash cans. They were... Trash cans on fire.
That's right, they were trash cans. Even it's because it was at a carnival.
It was Boardwalk. it was Santa Carla. They had to change the name of it. It was originally Santa Clara, which is an actual town in California. Yeah. It was filmed in Santa Clara. And I think one of the actors fucked up at one point in the film and called it Santa Clara.
Yeah.
By accident.
Yeah.
But anywho, so I guess there's a boardwalk or a pier, kind of like Atlantic, kind of like, you know, the Jersey Shore kind of deal, or San Diego's got one. Those Coney Island, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they were just going
about...
But
that's even worse, because it's like an everyday thing. Like, you could just go there on a Tuesday night, and that's the shit you're gonna see, like...
Well, it was summer break. I mean, I'm sure they shut it down when school's back in session and stuff like that. It's not as busy. Maybe they shut parts of it down. Daytona does something similar. And when it gets too cold, which I don't think Southern California has that issue, but when it gets too cold over here, they shut down a good chunk of, I mean, probably...
Yeah, like the water parks.
The water park gets
like
shut down. A couple of the rides get shut down, things like that they do. So, I mean, it's... A lot of places have... A lot of coastal towns have stuff like that going on. So it's not that uncommon.
Not hip-thrusting sexy saxophones.
Not anymore. God.
But yes.
Maybe that's what the world is missing. Because it's such a mess right now. Maybe we need to bring back oily saxophone players.
But no. But
not for nothing.
But I say that he should have been the head vamp. Like, that
just
would have been...
Just because what a twist.
That would have been like, whoa.
That's a swerve.
That would have been like some M. Night Shyamalama ding-dong twisties. Like, it's like, whoa, did not expect that.
Right, because he was featured in the movie, but enough time had gone by that you had a chance to kind of forget about him a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that would have been... I think that would have been...
Oh, God! Out of nowhere! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
Yeah.
No, I liked the way that it ended. I think they had to have, like, the big bombastic ending with the fucking... I love that they kept going back to Grandpa's taxidermy habit.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Like, they kept... It was a little bit of... It was a little Chekhov's gunny, but, like, the whole thing where they kept coming back to it, like, he brings the muskrat in when Sam's trying to go to bed, and he's like, this is for you, is the first thing.
Yeah.
And Sam's like, thanks, Grandpa! That's great!
Honestly, I would have been pretty stoked about that.
Nope.
Like...
nope. So, the muskrat goes in the closet. Sam had woken up at one point. At some point in the night, his grandpa brought in this stuffed owl and put it on his bedside table. And when he goes, and he's like, God, he needs to stop doing that. And he goes to the closet, opens the door, and it's full of taxidermy animals. Yeah. With the owl. I'm like, what is this? Like, they made an emphasis... There was an emphasis put on his taxidermy room when they first moved in, when the Emersons first moved in there. Like, there's just references to that all over. So it's one of those where it's like, okay, clearly this is going to have something to do with something somewhere.
See, one of the favorites that I have, like, so my family, like my mom and stuff, they have like a hunting property up in Georgia. And it's hilarious. Every year we go up there, and my stepbrother, he goes and he takes a cigarette and he puts it in every, like,
every deer head. Yeah, I remember him doing that.
It's so good. It's just like it works for some reason, but it's like
The first time we saw it, it took a minute to realize that he had done that, and then I looked up one day and I'm like, that deer's smoking.
Yeah, so now I started, like, going around, like, putting hats on them and, like, doing...
Tell me this part, though. When David got pitched onto... Or when Michael... And they were having that mid-air fight, Michael and David. Please tell me that when Michael spiked David on the antlers, you didn't have that moment where you were like, punish!
Oh, 100%.
Naughty!
Absolutely. I said naughty when it happened. Like, I'm not even joking.
Because if you're not sure and you haven't seen Silent Night, Deadly Night, there's a scene where Billy, dressed up in a Santa costume, grabs Linnea Quigley, and who's topless, and picks her up.
It's because
it's Linnea Quigley, and that's what you do. Mm. So he picked her up, showing. And he spiked her on, was it a reindeer head?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and hung her from the deer head. And so just for a split second, there was antelope horns that were on the pile of random animal parts in Grandpa's taxidermy room. And David got tackled onto it, and just, he got staked on those, and I'm just like, punish.
Yeah. You want to know what would have been, again, Craig is just full of ideas tonight, but you want to know what I thought would have been really cool?
What?
Is if they somehow was able to turn some of those taxidermy animals into actual weapons. Like, maybe Grandpa was giving him these animals, but they were secretly, like, weapons.
For a reason?
Yeah, like, you would, like, pull the snout of, like, a fox, and it turns into, like, a fucking, like, knife blade or, like, a cross or some shit.
No.
Or it's, like, a like, you just, like, you turn the skunk butt towards David and squeeze it, and it's, like, holy water comes out the, you know, it's, like, psst, like a spray bottle.
You know what was,
like,
really funny was the fact that Grandpa knew the whole time.
Yeah, he was, like, fine, what the
and
hell?
So, he had to have known what was going on with Michael then.
Yeah.
He had to have known. Because at the end of it, and Max gets staked on the fence post. Yeah, because there's a scene where Grandpa is repairing the fence, and he's putting in a huge fence post, but it's sharpened.
It's like overly.
It looks like a giant stake that was, like, 6 inches in diameter.
Like, someone's gonna be leaning on this later tonight.
Yeah, it was just so... But you're not gonna notice at all because of how everything is set up. You think, oh, he's just repairing the fence. After you've seen this a couple of times, you're going to go, hang on a second, because on the back of Grandpa's truck, he had all of the fence posts, and they were all sharpened.
Yeah.
Just about. And so when Max gets staked, and he gets out, and he goes and grabs his root beer, and he's just like, there's one thing I couldn't stand about this town, all the damn vampires. It's like, Grandpa, you didn't want to tell anyone.
Yeah.
Lucy never would have believed him.
No. Well, and that was the thing, is, like, I could definitely see him as that, just like
he was a kook.
Yeah, just the crazy old man. It's just like, and but at the same time, it's like it's hilarious that he was just like he never said really anything to his grandsons
about anything.
And it was all he had to do is be like, "Hey, you drank that shit, right?" Like I
well,
know.
Well, he
might
not have known. I don't think he knew how the mechanics of it worked.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it was still like the like, oh, well, nah. Yeah, you kind of bit, huh? Like, stinking vampire, right? All right, man, I've seen this before. Like, he's just
all the damn
yeah,
vampires.
It's that whole thing of, like, I do it to our son, too, where he'll do something and he'll think that I didn't notice or...
Yeah, right.
Or it's like...
And he's going to get away with something.
And I'm like, dude, it's like, dude, I've done that before. It's like, you can't play
I know
me.
What you're doing before you even think
yeah,
you're doing it.
It's like, come on, man. Like... You gotta give me a little bit more credit than that. It's like, I kind of felt like that's how Grandpa Lower is like, it's like, dude, like, I know. Like,
but he had to had to just let it happen. It's fine.
Boys will be boys.
Pretty much. And, like, everything in that house was a mess. They ruined, the toilet exploded.
Yeah.
When Brooke McCarter's character got, No, was it him? Yes. When he got pushed into the bathtub, the holy water bathtub.
Which is pretty awesome.
Which, oh yeah, when he started screaming and flailing and melting and stuff like that, and the blood started coming out of all the faucets, like, it was super dramatic. The toilet starts to break and explode. I'm like, Grandpa's gonna be so mad.
Yeah.
His toilet's broken.
This fucking vampire's destroying my toilet.
And it wasn't even Taco Bell night.
No. So, that was my thing, was... Like, where all, like, the blood and everything is, like, coming out of the drains. I'm like, how? It's, like, is just the pressure of, like, it just... I didn't understand.
It just made
it... It was a cool image,
well,
but it was
according
just, like,
to Edgar Frog, no two vampires die the same way. Some will explode, some will implode. Some will go screaming, some
no,
will go
no,
quietly.
No. You gotta say it like they do. Ugh. If you're gonna make me watch this, I want to hear the cringiest frog.
Fine, and especially because I've had because I'm getting rid of some chest congestion, so I might be able
and
to.
And we're
this.
Juiced up on Alani.
I just no two vampires die alike. Some explode, some implode. Some go screaming, some go quietly. I can't. It's so bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad. Which is funny, because that came after they staked Marco.
Yep.
I was like, that's not the place to have that line.
Yeah, no.
That should have been when they were outside the cave. He should have warned them about that. Because at that point, they had a fair idea of what could potentially happen if they killed a vampire. A lot of screaming, bleeding, and
yeah.
glitter.
Butt blood.
So, ew, stop it. So, I think one of the things that a lot of people forget about this movie... So, we talk about Anchorman and Knocked Up and a lot of the Apatow movies as being super quotable, right?
Yeah.
Super bad and those sorts of things. This movie is super quotable and has some of my favorite movie lines ever. One of them is when I forget the character's name, but he's got the long black hair, the black-haired vampire.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets killed, he takes Sam, shoots him with an arrow, and he gets pinned to a stereo system, and he gets electrocuted. And he's, Michael pulled Sam on the floor, and they're laying there side by side, and Corey Haim gets the biggest stupid grin on his face, and he's like, death by stereo. That's one of my favorites. My other one... That I actually, it's right up, and for as far as 80s quotes go, it's right up there with, you're so cool, Brewster.
Yeah.
Is the whole, I can't believe it, my own brother, a shit-sucking vampire. Ooh, you wait till mom finds out, buddy.
Yeah, that one. That's my favorite. Ooh, wait, you just wait, buddy.
You just wait till mom finds out, buddy. That one is really good.
I love that one.
Another one is Grandpa at the beginning when he's trying to get everybody acclimated and they're first moving into the house and he's giving them the lowdown and he's got the fridge. He opens up the fridge and you see a flap that says the old guy shelf.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how this is where I keep my root beers and my double thick Oreos. don't touch this shelf. And he's got this very ominous warning to the boys, like, you touch my shit, I'll break your fingers kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
Like, that's another one.
My favorite is the Batman comic, because I'm a Batman guy. Right. And so, I mean, they're just like...
And he's such a tough guy about it, too. I'm looking for a Batman number 14.
Oh, what are you looking for? These other like kitty cocks are over here.
The frozen yogurt stand went out of business last summer.
Oh, that's okay. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a comic shop and heard that conversation for another book. It's hilarious when you get that. I know what I know. And I'm going to prove that I know
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Like, no, I'm smarter than you. So,
a serious book.
Yeah. There's only five of those. Oh, my God. That's a very serious book. There's only five of those in existence. Four, actually. But I'm always on the lookout for the other three.
What is... Oh, my God. It's just, like, flex. Like, it's like, come on. You might as well just dab on them at that point.
It's so bad. I love it so much.
It's like Logan Paul with, like, the Charizard, like... like around his neck.
Oh, at WrestleMania?
Yeah, the Charizard. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, just, you give it to him. Like,
yeah, just because it's funny.
That whole line of just the, yeah, there's only like five in existence, four, but I'm always left to fifth. Like, come on.
And like, then he's like, listen, because before that, he was looking at the shelves and he was telling the frogs that their organizational system was wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't have this issue. Because of, you know, this character hasn't been introduced yet, and you can't have this issue here with these issues because of a certain plot element hasn't been introduced yet, and all this other stuff, and where are you from, Krypton? Phoenix, actually. Like, it's...
it's so bad, like...
The whole cadence is so silly.
It's so just, like, it's so big britches, and it's hilarious.
And it's
like,
just three dumb kids.
Yeah, it's like I said, I've been into comic shops and I've been in those like just talking. Like, I remember like, so because I play Pokemon every Saturday, and I've actually gotten like really into it, and it's really funny watching, like, I watch, you know, YouTube channels and everything else, just trying to like study up on like new cards and whatnot. And when you go into these card shops and you hear them talking about, like, strategies and doing all this other stuff,
it's a bit much.
And it's just, like, it's one of those things where I just kind of, like, sit back and I go, God, I love my life. Like, this is awesome. Like, this is,
nerd,
like,
shit.
This is the best. Like, I absolutely live for that type of shit because it's, like, because I can sit there quietly and then turn around and go, actually.
Glasses
pointed up. And I'm going to school you some shit. And then, like, throw in... I love when it happens back to me, but it's just like being able to have that, like, excuse me, like, by the way.
Do you have any gray poupon?
So I remember too, I used to work at Hot Topic, and if you ever looked at like my, at the time I had an actual like CD catalog for any of those kids back in the before times, we actually had big ass booklets where we packed all
the
of
binders,
our, the
yeah.
binders. I had the giant one because I just had so many CDs. Every weekend, I would just go out and just buy a new CD.
And we tried to keep them in our cars.
Yeah. Or I had the giant stack in my room of just the plastic cases. So, but because I was, I mean, if you look at my collection, I was so organized. I had everything alphabetized. I had it organized by genres. I had it like, so it was alphabetized by genres. Like, I was dedicated to this. So when I started at Hot Topic, I walked in there and like my brain tweaked so bad looking at that t-shirt wall. And so I was just like, I can't fucking handle this shit, because it's like you had Wu-Tang Clan next to Marilyn Manson and like Rob Zombie next to, you know, the Backstreet Boys or Justin Bieber, whatever they were selling at that point. But it was just like, I can't deal with this. Like, so I had to literally go and organize it. Like, and then they're finally like, Craig, you, I was like, it's like, we were going to just take the wall. It's like, it's your wall. Like, you organize. Like, yeah, they're like, because every time they go in, they're like, oh, like, I mean, I was like, I made it better. But it was just funny because I had to sit there and go, you can't do this. You can't have Cannibal Corpse next to Blink-182. It's not going to happen. You can't do it. It's like when you have these guys come in, and I went in this whole like nerd thing. They're like, Craig, we don't care.
It's like, fine. Just deal fine. With,
like, we don't care. Like, we don't even want to hear your explanation. And I'm like, listen, glasses, I need to school you on this. Like, I need to, like...
Yeah, I was like that at my last corporate salon job with the product shelves. I used to get real mad when people would start rearranging stuff or they would unload an order and put it in the wrong places. I would be standing there and I'd be like, no! And I'd be... Because we didn't have planograms, so I was the walking planogram. Yeah. But yeah, nerds doing nerd shit.
Oh, and so good.
Those scenes in the comic book store were pretty funny, and I just... When Edgar hands him the Vampires Everywhere book, and Sam's like, I don't like horror comics. And he's like, just think of it as a survival manual.
The fuck you do?
Yeah. Like, and then then Sam comes back a little while, like, I think it was either the next day or the day after. He came back shortly after that, during the day when they were getting ready to open. And he was looking through, and they hand him Destroy All Vampires. And he's like, I don't like horror comics. And that was when they said it's a survival manual. And it was Alan that told him that. And he's like, no, really, seriously, read it. And of course, naturally, Sam's like, you're nuts. But okay. And he did end up reading them. And especially when the Frog Brothers, which this part really cracked me up with those two. So they put a little sticky tag on the back of Destroy All Vampires with their phone number on it. I think it might have been to the shop. Because their parents were the aging hippies that were sleeping by the TV.
Yeah.
Their parents were, that was their shop. They just worked it. I'm pretty sure they were breaking all the child labor laws because they were working at night too. But anyway, so unless that wasn't a thing in the 80s, I don't remember.
I don't think it was like heavily enforced, but.
I mean, it was a family shop, so yeah, I think things were a little different.
Yeah.
But they put the phone number down and they were like, if you need us, call us. And, of course, Sam's like, what the fuck would I need you for? But fine.
I need your dark, velvety voice just to...
It's so bad. And he ended up needing it. Because when he discovered Michael was a vampire and everything else, like, he ended up having to call them. And I loved that the frogs acted like they knew what they were doing until they got to the cave. And they're trying to, like... bluff their way through this. Yeah. Like, it's not the first time they've killed a vampire, because it really was the first time they killed a vampire, because once they got Marco, and David was chasing him down.
This is too much. I can't do this.
They were screaming and yelling and running as fast as they could go. They left Sam. Like, they were about to dust Sam and leave him there. Because David had Sam by the ankle, and they're like yanking on him, and it looked like they were about ready to be like, fuck you, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. No soldier left behind, so bravo, Frog Boys. But the way they were acting like we're professional vampire killers when they'd never done it before. Marco was their first vampire. Now, as we go through the sequels, we'll see that they kept that up. Like, Edgar made it a profession. We'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah, as cringy as the Frog Brothers are.
They're good at their jobs.
That is one thing that I do appreciate, is that it stuck.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't change.
There's continuity to it.
There's continuity. And I'm a continuity guy. So I was like, you know what? I was like, as cringy as it is, I'm with it. Like, that's... with it because you guys kept to it. So...
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it any much better, but hey, like...
It's fine. It's a point.
It's
you
there,
gotta give
yeah,
points where there's points are due.
Yeah.
I unabashedly love this thing, because it just... It's corny. It's cheesy. It borders on bad because of a lot of the dialogue and stuff, but it is so... It's awesomely bad.
Is it? Like, I remember, like... So I was going through, I believe it was on YouTube... They had, now YouTube is doing this thing where you can watch movies that, you know, they have like...
Yeah, it's like a rental price or something.
Or even like, yeah, you could rent, but then there's sometimes where they have it on, like, for, like, you could just watch them.
Movies. And then they have, I think, if you have YouTube TV,
yeah,
there's something.
So, but like on, when I pull up Lost Boys on there, it's like they show where you could watch it, and it says comedy on it. I was like, is it actually labeled as a comedy, or is it...
Because
I've only seen it as a horror, but it's like, that was, like, the first time I'm like... That, I was like, that kind of makes sense with the comedy bit.
Like, it's a horror comedy. Yeah. Like, you could argue for sure that it's a horror comedy, because there's a lot of really... I mean, really, them the Three Stooges bit that basically was them running out of the vampire lair? I mean, yeah. There's a lot of comedic elements to it.
I mean, all the stuff with, like, with David and Michael and... And just, like, that seemed very serious and...
Yeah,
and
I would say the David and Michael stuff was a whole lot more serious. Although the Chinese food scene was goofy as hell.
Yeah, but, I mean, that was another thing. It was like, so, was it a mind-altering thing? Or did David actually have the ability to...
David was mind-fucking him.
Yeah, but I was just like, damn, like, that's another thing where it's, like, for vampires, it's... very they have the mind control bit, but it's more of like it's just the hypnotize. It's not a
I think the point of that was to go make that red herring a lot stronger, that like, because David was really the only one that exhibited like the special powers.
Yeah,
because he absolutely was mind fucking Michael. Yeah. With the Chinese food.
I just want some Chinese food.
After seeing like Kiefer Sutherland eating the noodles, I was like, boy, I could go for some noodles.
I just really want noodles right now.
Anyway, but because he was the only one that had that special power, none of the other ones did, it made it seem like he may potentially have been the lead vamp because of that. Because he had extra on top of what everybody else had already had. I don't know if it was because it was on purpose, if it was just inconsistency, or maybe the other vamps had something that we didn't necessarily pick up on because it wasn't fleshed out very well.
And the mind control stuff that was really crazy for me, like watching it, was there was no thing of that would give you a sense of like, David is doing something. Like, he's just talking. No,
he
just asked
a question. And he's just talking. Yeah.
He's like, oh, you like this. And then it's like, so the fact that when Michael looks down and he's eating worms, it's the whole mind fuck thing is maybe he was just putting the image in Michael's brain, but everyone else is just literally just sitting there just eating.
Well, everybody else knew it was in on the joke because you could see them laughing.
Yeah, yeah. But it was just funny because it was like there, it was so effortless. Mm-hmm. And that was the crazy thing. It was like, I wonder how many times or like what David does to just other people, mm-hmm. like to just, he can just sit there and go, cool, like you're eating, you know, a dog dick. I don't know. Like, it's just whatever, just to fuck with people since they're the bad boys of Santa Carla. Yeah. It's just like, what else could he have been doing just to pass the time? And, you know,
they're young. They're still technically teenage, quote unquote, teenage boys. So they're going to fuck with people. They're going to play pranks. They're going to be doing those things, which is age, like that kind of thing is age appropriate, right? Teenage boys are going to do some fuckery. If you overlook the fact that they were doing vampire stuff on top of it, they weren't really doing anything different than older teenage boys would have done. They would have gone out and party. They would have gone drinking on the beach. Yeah. Like, it's not like they were doing anything crazy. Racing their motorcycles.
Listening to Anthrax and, you know, Skid Row.
Wearing leather jackets and shit.
Bon Jovi. You know.
Speaking of music, this soundtrack was bitchin'.
Yes.
It was so good. So there was a feature for the Doors... when you're strange. So that was like a feature. They played that a couple times throughout the movie. Yeah. And I thought it was really funny that they put such an emphasis on the Doors because Jason Patrick had a very strong James Morrison vibe 100%. Going on. Especially because they had that iconic poster of that black and white image of James Morrison, Jim Morrison. From a few years before he died. Where his shirt's off, his hair is all like fluffy and wavy, and I mean, you can't miss it. Like, it's yeah. it's such an iconic image.
And they are very similar.
Yeah, there was a very similar look there. So that was part of it. There was... Didn't they play Walk This Way?
I believe they did. I think
they're playing Walk This Way with the punks on the beach.
Great. Now all I can think about is that fucking Kids in the Hall skit with the Doors.
I don't remember that one.
You don't remember that one? Mm-mm. Oh, so Bruce, he is playing this record store owner. Mm-hmm. And Kevin McDonald, I believe. Or no, who's the guy in Lilo and Stitch, the one eye?
Kevin McDonald.
Okay. So Kevin McDonald walks in and he's just very, just kind of just white bread every, you know, white guy thing, jacket. He's like, oh, well, like, I'm here for a record. And Bruce is like, get out of here, man. You don't belong here. He's like, we live differently than you do. And he's like, oh, wait a second. I want to get a Doors album. And he's like, wait, you like the Doors?
Oh, no.
Like, oh, then what's your favorite album? He's like, I like this one. And he pulls up, like, the greatest. He's like, only suckers get for greatest hits, man. And he's like, you want to go to the Morrison Hotel? He's like, you want to do this? He's like, you need to steal a car. And then you need to take this 8-track.
It's
like, take this 8-track. It's like, you have to steal the car. You have to play the 8-track. And you have to listen to the 8-track front to back and go to the Morrison. Like,
it's too much.
This whole thing. And then, like, it's the whole bit just goes fucking off the rails. But, like, every time I hear the Doors, that skit always pops into my brain. It's like, you're not a Doors fan. Get out of here.
But probably the most well-known track was written for the movie, Cry Little Sister. And, which is awesome. And it takes all of my willpower not to sing it at the top of my lungs. Oh my god. Like, it's almost painful how hard it is to, like, not make a complete ass of myself when it's playing.
Listen, we are in Kohl's.
No, man! Just, you know where that, remember that episode of Family Guy where Meg and Peter go to the Stevie Nicks concert and Peter's wearing the Stevie Nicks get up and he's like, if she plays Edge of 17, that's everyone just get away from me.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can hear the bass line pick up for Edge of 17 and he's like, everyone back up, I need some twirling room. I feel like that when that comes on. Well,
that's usually like or the iconic Jamie Josta line, just don't get around me, bro.
Yeah.
Just back the fuck up. It's like, I hear that music, I'm just at the pit starting, like, it's
and obviously going. And obviously the original version is, it's amazing. Like, you can't. It's so 80s. It is so very clear. The synth is in there. The weird sound effects are in there. The different guitar effects are in there. Like, it's a very heavily electronic 80s version.
And what's great is that it doesn't actually leave a certain level. Like, so it builds and then it stays. Like, it's just, it continues.
It hits.
Like,
kind of, I wouldn't say it plateaus anywhere in the song, but it's a very slow, steady build all the way to the end of it. Yeah. There's no weird key changes. It just very slowly picks up intensity through to the end of the song. And it has been covered a bunch. Most recently, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, maybe? Marilyn Manson? No, it was last year. Marilyn Manson did a version of it. Wow, it's bad.
Now, okay, so before we did the podcast, or started the podcast, I went through and I actually listened to each of the covers just to kind
of
get
a good
comparison,
yeah.
Right? And the funny thing is, like, I remember the Marilyn Manson one being pretty bad, but it's like, I needed a little refresher. So I pulled
just
it up and
remind
I'm like,
yourself how bad it really
but
was.
I was like, you know what? It's not as bad.
It's bad.
It's there's, but the thing is that when you listen to the original, I was trying to like figure out why the differences, like what made the Marilyn Manson one not as good. And it's because they're so flat. Or Manson does his, like, his the iconic, weird voice, like, thing. Like, I can't do it, but it's just like, you know.
Please,
but like,
don't try again. No. Please.
Try it again?
No.
Okay, give me a second.
Don't you dare.
Okay, hold on. Like, so it's like, sorry, everybody.
His voice is cracking, and it's wailing, and it's just not good.
But it's just like, but he's doing that moan, that Marilyn Manson moan, on the ends of each thing. It's kind of like James Hetfield with, you know, Metallica, where it's like, yeah, like, after, you know, most of his shit. But it's just like, the Manson thing, it's because he's so flat. Even the Aiden cover that they did for, was it Tribe?
For the Tribe, yeah. It was super fucking flat.
Yeah, I mean, it was very flat. And I am, like, I like Aiden. Like, I enjoy it. I like their first two albums. And, but it's very, when you hear it, it's just like, there's a level of intensity, but then it's just, boom, it just flattens. And it doesn't really fit. But the best cover is from, what is that band?
From Seasons After.
From Seasons After.
Now, mind you, Seasons After is, like, a B-tier butt rock band. And if nobody knows what butt rock actually means...
Explain that shit.
By now, hopefully everybody knows what butt rock means. But for those of you left scratching your heads, because I have met a few people that are like, I'm sorry, what rock? Butt rock is the radio rock stuff. It's the stuff you hear on your local rock station. They go, where we play nothing but rock.
It's Nickelback.
It's Nickelback and Breaking Benjamin and Chevelle and Stone Sour and Sick Puppies and 3 Days Grace and it's a lot of that stuff. So, Seasons After is a total butt rock band, but that is the best version because they keep that intensity. They added,
like, heavier guitars.
It's a little heavier. They added in some rock elements that the original didn't have because it was a bit new wavy.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like, even like the like when they start getting into the chorus, it's like, when he's like, cry, little sister, and then all of a sudden, like, you get the chugs, and it's just like, oh, shit. And
it gets almost genty in some places because you get that chugging sound. Not super genty because it is still a butt rock band, but, like, it gets a little bit of that on there. And this is from, like, 2010. I think they did this version, and we were watching the video, and I was like, I was putting my punk rock MBA hat on, and I was watching, and I was looking at it, and I was like, all right, let's find the drip, let's look at the butt rock drip, and I was like, there was wristbands, and eyebrow piercings,
check.
Boot cut jeans,
check.
Affliction t-shirts,
check. Oh, how are the ladies dressed?
Oh, they were dressed like the Fox Racing sluts from back then, minus the skunk hair.
Lot of leather and a
super
lot of
super short skirts, tank tops. But the girls were the vampires, and they were turning the band.
Yep.
So they were when they were doing the jam session parts of the video, you could see the lead singer. They all had fangs, but you see the lead singer especially because he was singing along.
He looked like a mixture between, like, Danny Filth and Trent Reznor.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, if Danny Filth washed his face and was, like, 6 inches taller,
yeah,
he might have had a chance. But yeah, that's the best version of it. I've heard a few different ones, but I was never super impressed. I was always going back to the original. But that one, because it's got a little bit more of an edge to it, I really quite liked it, and I would highly recommend it. But it's been sampled a bunch, too. L.A. Guns covered it back in 2009. Eminem sampled it on his Recovery album in 2010.
Which is good.
Yeah, You're Never Over. Tangerine Dream covered it. Crazy Bone from Bone Thugs and Harmony sampled it in 2015 on his Chasing the Devil album. Dee Snider did a cover of it on... Yep. Well, it was a side project. It was Van Helsing's Curse. The album was called Oculus Infernum. Tyga sampled it in 2015. Little B sampled it in 2011. I'm looking at the list here to see if it... Churches covered it just last year. And Silver Sun Pickups did an acoustic version of it for Sirius XM in 2019.
Which is also really good.
That one's really good. I don't... Vocally, it was the part that worked... I don't think the song works great as an acoustic song,
though. No, but that was the thing, is like going from Manson and Aiden, where they're just very flat, to the Silver Sun Pickups,
where they actually put a little emotion in.
Yeah, I was like, that made the song 10 times better. I was like, just singing it, and it's just not having that cap or the flatness. It's like, and especially with, you know, with the, what's that, the band we just mentioned?
Seasons After?
Seasons After. I wanted to say something else. I was like, that was not even close.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah, but when they do it, it's like, he's actually singing it, and it's not...
Yeah.
And also, on top of that, when they start getting into, like, the chuggy bits, mm-hmm. it's like, you also have someone screaming in the background, and I'm like... That also adds a whole nother layer,
yeah,
and intensifies and amps that shit up. And I was like, it's beautiful.
And as metalcore fans,
yeah,
that's fine. So, like, that really works. But we were talking about it a little bit, like, okay, so Seasons After, as far as covers go, sometimes there are cover versions of songs that I think I almost like a little bit better than the original versions. Placebo's version of Running Up That Hill.
Yep.
Comes to mind. So Kate Bush, if you haven't been paying attention over the last 6 months, since the last episode of Stranger Things dropped, Kate Bush has had her first major hit in 37 years.
Yeah.
Because Running Up That Hill was featured on Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And so it's been fucking everywhere for months. Every metalcore band has started covering it. And, like, it's just everywhere. So back in 2008 or 2009, Placebo had done a version of it. I think they had done, like, a covers album. And their version of Running Up That Hill actually got pulled to go on the Vampire Diaries show, which is where I heard it.
Where Is My Mind is really good on that album.
Anyway, so I think you need to figure out where your mind went. So that's where I had originally heard that version. So that Running Up That Hill springs to mind as, like, one that I actually almost prefer over the original. I sometimes tend to even like acoustic versions of songs a little bit more than their original released versions. Iceland Kills' Stabbing in the Dark is one of those. They did a re-recording acoustic version with Matt Heafy from Trivium. And it's really, really good. Which is funny, because when I first heard the actual album version of Stabbing in the Dark, I was like, man, this could be a Trivium song. Because there was some vocals in the chorus part where I was like, that kind of sounds like Matt Heafy. And then they went and... Obviously, I wasn't the only one that thought that, because they did an acoustic version with Matt on there. So, which is great. But we got to talking, and it was like, who could do Cry Little Sister and do it justice? Because on paper... Marilyn Manson doing it would have been a great idea.
It's 100% a Marilyn Manson, because it's like, it's such a goth song where it's just like, okay, who would you do it? I mean, again, Manson, I think early Manson.
25 years ago.
Yeah, early Manson, like when he did like Sweet Dreams, and like, I think that would have been...
Or even a Mechanical Animals era.
Yeah, that would have been fine. Cool, yeah.
But so on, before the song was actually released, and... It was kicking around that Marilyn Manson had this cover coming out. I was like, ooh, that's interesting. That could work. And then I heard it, and I was like, that does not work. At all.
Abort! Get out of here! Red flags!
So we got to talking, and it was like, okay, so this is such an iconic song, and it's a fun song to cover. Like, it has to be. And Silver Sun Pickups did okay. Seasons After did a great version of it. Well, who could we... do, and we were watching the Seasons After music video for it, and I was like, you know, we could do one better, and have, what if Bullet for My Valentine did it?
Oh my god.
Because Seasons After is basically a watered-down Bullet for My Valentine.
Yeah, if Bullet did it, it was just like, it would just be way too far, especially, like, new Bullet. Holy shit.
Well, because they,
like,
went back to being heavy. Yeah. Like, the stuff they were doing on The Poison.
God, oh my god. Well, no, like, their last album, or, like, the latest album... I even, like, turned it to you. I was just like, have you listened to this shit yet? I was like, oh my, like, I am jamming out to this shit. I am like, just don't be around me, bro. Like, just get the elbows going. Like, I'm interested to see, like, did you have any others? I actually have, I think, two or three ideas.
Well, who would you think could make that song work? Because, like, I think we've hit all of the beats for the film, for the most part, minus the fact that, I mean, Kiefer Sutherland was also amazing in this.
Yeah.
I don't want to downplay his part. And the fact that somehow he accidentally made the mullet popular, because he, when he had bleached his hair, it was broken around the front, so he'd had it cut. And, there we go. Thanks for the mullet, man.
Yeah. So, do you want me to go into my...
Yeah, who do you think could take Cry Little Sister, make it their own, but actually kill it?
So, I'm gonna give you my honorable mention that's kind of like a... duh, like, that's an easy kind of, you know, like, kind of toss-up type thing. Evanescence. Evanescence, I think, would be a really easy one for that.
Just stick with the goth thing?
Yeah, stick with the goth thing. In third place for that, him. Billy Botlock, I think him, and it because of that eerie synth, but you could still get the good rock, and he's got a great voice. If you wanted to go, I don't think... I've never been a big fan of him, but, like, with, like, Type O Negative, like, that was, I mean, he, it just wouldn't work, I mean, because it's too deep, but it's got that, like, he's got that cadence and the, I don't know, like,
sort of.
I think if it was done properly, maybe Type O, but definitely Evanescence and him. But I think my go-to for that, Periphery.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Periphery would fucking destroy.
They could definitely do something with it.
You would get so genty with that thing. And his voice is so...
It works.
...good. And it's so powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's clean. And then, like, when he gets into the screams, it's like... You could really just amp that whole... Like, just... He would kill it. So, yeah, Periphery would be awesome. If you were going, like... Metalcore, I think maybe I was thinking like Killswitch, but
I'm actually
like,
kind of surprised Howard. Like Motionless and White hasn't done something with it yet.
I could see Motionless for sure doing something.
He needs
something.
To back up. Chris needs to back up on the vocal fry because that's getting annoying.
Yeah, the fry is starting to get a little
it's
too
a bit
much.
He's
yeah.
gonna ruin his voice.
But like you got like Memphis May Fire, like they I mean like I mean if you're just taking it metalcore.
Yeah, I don't think Matty Mullins has the voice.
No,
for it.
But what's the it starts with an A.
Well, that narrows it down.
No, they're very genty.
Architects. Seriously?
I think Architects. Like, I'm saying it's like...
No, I mean, how did you forget the Architects
oh,
exist?
Oh, yeah, I know.
What's the matter with you?
I was thinking of, like, Addicted, and I was like, that's not even close, Craig. But yeah, no, like, Architects would be a really good one as far as, like, if you just turn the song metalcore. Because those guys can just... Or even, like, Memphis May Fire or some... Like one of those bands... But it would just be a straight metalcore rip. Like, you wouldn't have, like, the eeriness or anything like that. Periphery, for me, I think would be awesome because you could do the synth, you could do the genty, and it would still flow very, very well. So I think it would be cool.
I think,
I just had another idea, but go ahead.
I think keeping in that vein could potentially work. I feel like... Kind of stepping outside the box a little bit. I think Greg Puciato could do something with it.
Ooh.
Greg from Dillinger. Well, he's not Dillinger anymore.
God, that's a good one.
Have you heard the stuff he's done with Jerry Cantrell?
Oh, yeah.
Holy bananas.
It's fucking great. Like, he's like, all the shit that he's been doing with any of his side bands. It's like.
Black Queen and,
oh
and
my
stuff
God.
Like that.
Yeah. Like, it's so good.
I think Puciato could do something with it.
Damn, that's a good one.
I think a weird. But probably super, like, haunting version could be... Billie Eilish could do something with it.
Yeah. It's like sleepy time music.
Yeah, but I think her take on it would at least be interesting.
Weezer?
No. Dorothy could do something
Ooh,
with it.
Ooh, Dorothy, yeah.
I think she would destroy that song.
Yeah.
Her voice is incredible, especially since she's gotten sober. Holy
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, Dorothy, I could see that.
She's a good one. I'm actually kind of surprised Fame on Fire hasn't done it yet, because they started as a cover band. They're really good. The singer has an interesting voice. Okay. I think there's a few oddballs that we could do here. So
I have one more, and I'm kind of hurt that you haven't said like who. Spirit Box.
I was about to say Spirit Box.
Oh, actually. Yeah, I'm glad that you and me on that same page.
I think they could do a really bass heavy version of it.
Oh my god, her voice.
When their bassist left the band this year, I was like, what the fuck? He was the most underrated bassist.
Oh god, yeah. I didn't
ever heard. Like, if you listen to the Mara Effect stuff,
mm-hmm.
It is so bass heavy, and he's so, so good. And he left the band this year. So.
Man, it's a bummer. But Spirit Box is hands down like one of my top bands.
We're gonna get to our skull rating here in a second. But yeah. Did you see my iTunes top 10 songs?
Yeah, I saw it. I was
my top 10 songs.
I didn't want to look at mine.
My iTunes. So Apple Music is doing the same thing Spotify is doing with like the year end review thing.
You're gonna have to pull it up for me so I can see what mine is. But
mine is my top 10 songs were all Spirit Box, and I was like, ha. Well. Eternal Blue was a banger, and I love the Mara Effect stuff. But yeah, I think they could do an incredible version of it. So, skull rating. Let's go ahead and go home on this one.
I'll take this one, and then I'll let you finish up since this was your go. Because
I think mine's obvious. So where are you land on this one? Because I know how you felt about it in the past.
In the past, I was very cringed with the boys. But I did love the vampires. Like, I thought that was really a lot of fun. I love just that biker gang, just the bad boy. Like, I like that. I kind of wish that there would have been a little bit more. Like, I actually wanted more detail as to the history of the boys. Like were some of them ancient, or were some of them, you know, where they've lived so long that they've just gone through all these trends and they just, you know, developed and, you know, all that shit. It's like, I would love to hear those stories because I'm that kind of guy. I like to see how my hot dogs are made. But that was the thing was the Frog Brothers always made me just cringe. And every time you wanted to watch the movie or something like that, I'm like, oh my god, I gotta sit through the fucking Frog Brothers. And I did that same thing this time around. However, I can definitely see the comedy appeal of it. And it's like, I can deal with it, but it's like, for me, this movie, I think, is probably around like a 3.6.
Wow, it's wasn't high. Expecting
I like
that.
It.
I was expecting it at max to be like
no,
three.
I like the more that I do watch it, I like it a lot. I love just that dynamic of adding that, you know, the whole thing of a kid having to deal with his mom dating and moving to a new town and trying to make friends and then all of a sudden now having to deal with vampires and your brother, like. And it's also that whole thing of like, oh, my brother is basically getting into
drugs.
The drugs and new kids and it's like, take the vampire shit out, and like, you would have like a, you know, a teen drama movie if that was the whole thing. It's like adding the fucking when they turn vamp, it's fucking boss. Like, it's really cool. Like,
yeah, the vamp makeup works.
However, Kiefer's eyes, he's fucking crazy ass. Like, whenever he goes into the context, they fucking bank off in like these different directions. I'm like, what? Like, where are you looking there, bud? Like,
it's just, oh, stop it.
He's got the boss eyes.
It's pretty bad. It's
because of the context.
And actually, I remember seeing, there's a lot of like vampire movie coffee table books that I've seen where that face is the cover.
It's like, really, I love cool. When he first like pops in
from the dark.
Oh my god, that's so good. So I definitely love it. But yeah, 3.6 for me. It's like, I think a younger, you know, fresher lunchbox probably would have given it a lower score. But it's more of a, like, I can't deal with the cringiness. But it's
you gotta be a cool kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, like, you know what? It's like, it's, I like it. It's. It's a fun movie. I could watch it. It's good. Like, well, so I'm with it.
The cringiness, air wiggles.
Yeah.
The cringiness, the cheesiness, the campiness, like the just pure 80s goodness. of this movie is part of its charm. It's so, so charming. And it's honestly one of my favorite parts about it is, like, there's so, I wince with some of the dialogue where I'm like, whew, that delivery was bad. Don't care. That's part of the charm. So this one's a 5.0 for me. Now, forever and always.
Which is your first. You have yet to give a 5.0. I've given, like,
three or four. I've given a 5 to Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
I've given a 5 to Fright Night and American Werewolf in London. I've only done it a few times. Yeah. I don't give them out
to
give
them out. It's very, very rare. But, I mean, most of those movies, I've given, like, my bullshitty gold,
Jaws, platinum, the adamantium skull, psycho.
So, but yeah, I'm happy that that is a 5 for you.
You
don't get that.
No, often. And I'm not very liberal with the 5 skulls because I think it's a tough one to earn. That it's just, you have to have, and I don't have a ton of nostalgia because, like I said, I was 18 or 19 the first time I saw this movie. I was older. It wasn't like I was 9. Or 10, like, it was, I was way older, but, I don't know, I've got pop figures, and I've got the Blu-rays, and I've watched both of the sequels. Oh, God save me, I've watched both of the sequels.
God save me, I've watched both of the sequels.
I know. I watched, Cinema Sins, just on YouTube, just did, a couple weeks ago, he did his Lost Boys video, which was hilarious. The whole time I'm like, you son of a bitch, but that's right.
Yeah, you're
but not you're wrong. Not wrong. I just unabashedly love this movie. And I can never, whenever anyone asks me, it's usually one of the first ones out of my mouth when they're like, what's your favorite film? Well, depending on what we're talking about here, it's probably top 5.
Yeah.
Of all time. Of all that stuff. It's funny. It's got a sweet, like, story about, it's got a sweet brotherly love story.
The pacing and the just the actual storytelling of it, as I'm watching it, it actually felt comfortable. And the shit with Max, and
it's a good pace.
Like, everything is just it flows great. And after, like, the whole time, I think like, as I'm watching it, I was having, like, flashbacks to when I first watched it before I even met you, and it was because someone was like, oh yeah, Schumacher made this movie. You know,
so that immediately Batman. I was just like, oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
So I was like, oh, we have to watch it because of this. And
you wanted to shit on it, I'm sure.
No, I didn't want to shit on it, but it was just like, I was expecting just that, some of the bad Batman stuff to come up. And I was just like, okay, like that, like the saxophone dude, I was like, all right, that's kind of like, it feels like a Schumacher thing, but it's just like, but as, like, the movie went on, I was like, oh, this doesn't feel like a Schumacher. It felt like
it feels a bit like a Richard Donner movie. Yeah. Which is what it was originally supposed to be. But yeah, this is a 5.0. Cool. I highly recommend all the time.
Yeah.
Like, if you love the 80s, just that 80s cheese, and you don't want to take a movie too seriously, and this movie does not take itself seriously at all.
No,
it knows what it is.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that I appreciate the most, because it's like, we know what movie we're making, and then we're going to have a damn good time doing it.
Yeah, the one little thing that I wish would have happened a little bit more in this film, though, is more Alex Winters. Like, I want more Alex Winters, because I love him. So
this was,
like,
pre-Bill and Ted, though, yeah. So...
I mean, but it's like, for some reason, like, he kind of stood out to me out of all of the other, like, little...
The background vamps?
Yeah. And it's like, I kind of wish, like, he didn't go out first. I kind of wish that maybe he would have been the guy in the bathtub. Like, I think he would have been really cool, but it's, I mean, even then, it's like, they all were fantastic. It was just like, I love Alex Winters, so it's
he was
like,
also the oddball, because he wasn't the eye candy.
No, but that's why it's like, I think it would have worked a little bit better as, you know, keeping him a little bit more closer to, like, David or, you know, something like that. Like, so, I don't know, it was cool, but, I mean, having it as a 3.6 for me is...
That's a big deal.
It's pretty cool, like, so, I mean, it's good, like, so I'm with it, for sure.
So... That wraps up The Lost Boys. It's all downhill from here.
Oh, God.
Next week, we're going to do the sequel that was 20 years in the making. We're going to do Lost Boys, The Tribe, which we see the return of Corey Feldman, but we also get Kiefer Sutherland's younger half-brother, Angus, as in the quote-unquote David role. in this one. So this is going to be an interesting one. I've seen it one time, and that was it.
Yeah,
and that was probably 15 years ago.
We've seen they're sequels. We've seen the sequels only once.
I've seen the Thirst a couple times.
Oh, really? Because I've only seen it once.
No, I've seen it couple of times. That one's less offensive that I remember.
But
let's
Tribe.
Let's see if my memory of the Tribe is the same.
For me, there's only one thing that I remember from these sequels, and it's just one thing. So this is basically, when I go into it, it's going to be brand new for me. Like, so yeah, I'm interested to see what it's going to be like.
The only through thread is Edgar Frog.
Yeah.
That's the through thread for these. So until next week, join us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at CreepinItReal. Email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. And don't forget about the merch store at creepinitreal.redbubble.com.
Craig has holy pants.
We need to get the pants fund off the ground. So please buy some merch. This poor man.
In the arms of the angels.
So until next week, I'm Mistress Meg.
I've been the good buddy Lunchbox.
And what are you, the flying nun?